This is a Hot Pie Media original.
This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. Now, we're all a little bit more stressed this time of the year. We got family coming in town, holidays, all of that. I don't know about you, but if there's something interfering with your happiness or is preventing you from achieving your goals, BetterHelp.com will assist your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. You can start communicating in under 48 hours. Now, this isn't a crisis line. It's not self-help. It's professional therapy done securely online. There's a broad range of expertise available, which may not be locally available where you are. The service, though, is available to clients worldwide. You can log into your account anytime and send a message to your therapist, and you're going to get a timely and thoughtful response. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions, so you won't ever have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room as you do with traditional therapy. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so they make it easy and free to change therapists if needed. It's more affordable than traditional online therapy, and financial aid is available if you need it. BetterHelp, BetterHelp. BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today. Visit BetterHelp.com/gray. That's BetterHelp.com/gray. BetterHelp.com/gray. And join the over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp that they're recruiting additional therapists in all 50 states. Special offer to the Gray Area podcast listeners. You get a 10% off. That's a 10% discount. A 10% discount on your first month at BetterHelp.com/gray. That's BetterHelp.com/gray. You know, for us, usually it's the other way around, right?
Like, yeah, my dad, I talk about that on stage a lot more now.
My dad wasn't around.
That, you know, I can say my dad was in my life. Like, the joke I just started working on was the fact that he cared. He used to record my favorite cartoon on the VHS. Only problem is he would record him over his old porn.
Oh, no.
And then kind of go, yeah, that's kind of heavy.
Media. Big Dumb B. Made by G.R. Braun.
To the Gray Area. Here's your host, Aaron Cheadle.
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody, and welcome to the Gray Area Podcast. I am your host, Aaron Cheadle. I'm not sure if that's, did I make the right sound? Is that a turkey sound? Cock-a-doodle-doo! No, that's not. All right, well, happy Thanksgiving either way, from the Gray Area. Hey, glad to see you guys. Glad to be here with you. Man, thank you guys for all the love from the episode last week with Back. That was a blast to be with my brother and talk about our time at Skankfest. Our guest this week, old friend of mine. I'm extremely proud of this brother, and I'm glad to have him join us here in the Gray Area. He's the owner, CEO of Upstage Comedy Lounge in San Antonio, Texas. Want to welcome Bobby Smith to the Gray Area. What's up, Bobby?
Hey, what's happening? Happy to be here on the Gray Area. That's right. We do go way back, too.
We go way back, man. I mean, like, shit. All right. So to give everybody a brief background, like, I've known Bobby as long as I've been in comedy. Like, Bobby is like a couple years, maybe a year and a half ahead of me. You started about a year, like maybe a year or two before I started doing comedy. And
probably a little bit longer. I don't know. Yeah, maybe a couple years.
It was a couple years. And it's like, and you and I have traveled a lot of the same roads. Some of them I traveled right behind you. Like, you know, some people may not remember, but you were in Comedia Go-Go back in the day. And then
there's a story behind that too.
Yeah, you left Comedia Go-Go, and then I became the black guy in Comedia Go-Go.
That was pretty much it.
Yeah.
Like, I was trying to figure out, like, I didn't want to just leave without finding a replacement. And I just happened to see somebody that was kind of on the same
thoughts
as me, you know. I did like sketch comedy. I loved it. It's just, you actually fit in way better than me.
It was right time, right place, I suppose. But I mean, we've been up and down the roads. I'll tell you one thing that I may have said this maybe to Larry, but I've always said that Bobby Smith is like the Sean Elliott of comedy. Like, damn. And not just because we used to play ball together back in the day too. Back when I first started doing comedy, we used to play a lot of pickup games. And you got Sean Elliott's game like a motherfucker. Like Sean Elliott look at you and go, Nick, is that me? Like,
damn.
Yo.
That's my first time ever hearing it.
Really? And you clutch. Yeah. You clutch on Memorial Day like a motherfucker too.
Yeah. Now, that's true. I always thought I was clutch. Oh, and I would spot up my little side three. Man, that's crazy. That's a crazy comparison.
Man, and when it comes to this comedy game, like, I always thought you were overlooked. People like overlooked you, maybe underrated, but just like Sean Elliott, when you gave that nigga the ball, Bobby Smith is going to put it in the bucket, you know? So
that might be one of the best compliments I've ever received. I appreciate that.
I am a compliment machine, motherfucker. All right.
Nah, but just the whole comparison. Ain't nobody else in the world going to compare me to Sean Elliott, you know?
Yeah.
I hate him as a commentator, but I respect his game.
If I told you I had the Suns and Warriors in the Western Conference Finals, what would you say to that?
For this year?
Yeah.
I would say you're looking pretty accurate right now.
Yeah? What if I said Bulls and Bucks on the other side?
I don't know about the Bulls. I don't know. I just got to see how they look in the playoffs. I haven't really been able to watch them, but I mean, they look excited.
See, that's that DeMar DeRozan bias you got right there. Y'all San Antonio motherfuckers still mad at DeMar DeRozan and Dennis Rodman.
I don't know. It's something about DeRozan that, I don't know, that just don't. I guess since he got ate up by LeBron so many years in a row, it's like, man, where's his heart at?
Oh, you already taking shots at DeMar like that?
Yeah, I've never been a big fan. I mean, you know, he came up with Little Romeo.
Oh shit, that's a fact. USC, what up? That's a fact.
I think he got Little Romeo at USC for the most part, besides his dad.
No shit.
Yeah, that was kind of like Master P's negotiation. He's like, you know, DeRozan's with me, so y'all can't get him unless y'all bring in Little Romeo.
Oh no shit. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Are you
just me and Master P didn't know?
Yeah, right. Because you bowed it from all the way back in the day, Walter. Are you a Lakers fan?
I'm a LeBron James fan.
Okay. So. Okay. Cause yeah. I never really pegged you as a Spurs fan, even though we both came up through San Antonio. I hate the Spurs. But I never really had you pegged as a Spurs fan. I always felt like you leaned more outside of San Antonio.
First of all, like, why do you hate the Spurs? Like, there's no reason to hate the Spurs unless they really did, you know, something to one of your teams.
Why do I hate the Spurs? Man, this is all right. The short story of it. So I actually was kind of a fan of the Spurs when I lived in Mississippi. Like, because you know how when you're a kid, if somebody brings you or gives you something from like a sports team, you kind of start liking that sports team. So my mom one year had given me a Spurs hat, and I was already a Bulls fan. I was a Bulls fan. I mean, since I moved from the Philippines, I moved to Mississippi. They know local teams around there. So I kind of got the pick. And this is like 89. And I fell in love with Jordan, fell in love with the Bulls, and like that was my squad. My mom brings me a Spurs hat, and I was like, you know what? The Spurs are my third favorite team. We fast forward to 95. I moved to San Antonio, and we were living off of Fredericksburg in a two-bedroom apartment. And like Fredericksburg and Data Point, I'm getting real specific.
I know the area.
Yeah, we were living in some hood-ass apartments over there, and We had one TV, so I'd read like a lot of the sports pages in the newspaper. And I remember, so I was keeping up with like everything going on with the Spurs. I was one of those kids. I was looking at the box scores after games for the whole league and all that stuff in the newspaper. Newspaper, guys, right. If you don't know, it's a big piece of paper with words printed on it, tell you the news of the day. Kind of what you go to Facebook and Twitter for, but it was paper for. Right. And that's where you can get all your sports info and shit. And so I was keeping up with like Rodman, so my whole family's from Detroit. So I kept up with the Pistons and everything. They had been whooping the Bulls' asses. The Spurs get Rodman, and I was excited because I knew who Rodman was. I was like, yo, this dude's amazing. And I watched the news cover Rodman, and I was like, why the fuck are y'all tripped? Like, they were just, they were putting all of Rodman's business in the news. Dennis Rodman was seen last night riding on his motorcycle down 410, and it is against his contract to be riding the motorcycle during the season. And it's like, what the fuck are you reporting? So I ain't like that. I ain't like that. And then, like, Bob Hill was a really good coach, and then Popovich, who was the general manager, was like, yeah, you're fired. I'm a draft Duncan, and now I'm the coach. And I was like, that's a hoe-ass move. You know what? Fuck the Spurs. Y'all talk shit about Rodman. You made him look crazy when he was here. Ain't nothing wrong with Rodman. Why do y'all hate Rodman? And y'all acting all goody two-shoes? Fuck David Robinson and all those lips. And then fucking Popovich wanted to be the goddamn coach? Fuck him, too. This is some bullshit.
First of all, everything that you're mentioning, like, Dennis Rodman was at the height of his craziness when he came to San Antonio. That's when he wanted the attention. He was like social media, like, before social media, he was doing all that craziness.
Yeah. I dug it, though.
Bob Hill was not a good coach.
He got y'all to the Western Conference Finals.
Bob Hill. I went to school with Bob Hill's son, and he was an asshole, too.
Oh.
But I'm just kidding.
Everybody
was an asshole when we was in seventh grade. Popovich turned the whole team around. How can you hate on that? He knew, like, Popovich knew what needed to be done, and Dennis Rodman was a distraction, and he wanted the attention.
That's fine. They didn't have to cover him the way they did. I felt like they did the man dirty, made him look like he was a deviant. He was, you know what? He was trying to figure out who he was. He had a rough life. He'd been in Detroit all this time. They sent him down to corny ass San Antonio, and he's just trying to figure it out. You know, he was going through some shit. That's when you need to put your arms around somebody and embrace them, not air out all their laundry and then gas them up and send them somewhere else. Like, that was, I thought they did him foul. I loved Rodman. They did him foul.
Well, yeah. That's the thing about Popovich. He didn't take, like, you know, you couldn't have any type of personality with Popovich if you had, like, some type of, like, you know, rebellious attitude or whatever. Even cornrows or whatever, he's probably going to get rid of you, so.
Oh, facts. Like, there's a lot of guys that could not play for Popovich. Like, AI couldn't have got down with Popovich. Like, that would have been a match made in hell.
Yeah.
Melo.
There's somebody like that was going to come to San Antonio at one point. Can't remember who it was.
Ooh.
I don't know.
Anyways, we didn't come here to talk just about the NBA. So you just started the Upstage Comedy Lounge. Before that, though, you've been busy as a comedian, and you've always had, like, other interests outside of comedy, including music. you can actually flow. I would say in the lexicon, in the hierarchy of San Antonio comedian rapping, you're number two. I think you can say you're number two.
Okay, I didn't know that was a category. So
I make a lot of lists. I make a whole lot of lists. of course, I'm number one on that list.
Okay.
Yeah, I had all I.
Are
had
you
do,
spit too?
I dropped one track, and that's all I needed was Dookie Phone. We dropped Dookie Phone, and
Dookie Phone, okay, and
that was it. I think that the fire I laid down in Dookie Phone, I still ain't seen nobody from San Antonio come close to it.
Okay.
Yeah. No,
I gotta look up Dookie Phone. Please. The title alone is
Don't do it. Don't do it to yourself. that's a Comedia Go-Go video, and you will be mad at me if you watch it.
Okay.
I think Clifton, though. I think everybody says Clifton is probably got the best flow.
Clifton got the energy. He got the, you know, he got a voice. I hate my rapping voice. Like, I wanted to be a rapper before a comedian, and I would just write rhymes, but the voice is important.
You definitely got the voice. You got that Snoop thing with your voice.
Yeah, but I don't know. It ain't quite Snoop, you know.
No.
Snoop got a little more swag with it, I guess.
So what drew you? Because you're, like, clearly you're an artist at heart. You're born to create. What I'm trying to ask is, like, what took you in this direction? What was there a moment when you were young that art spoke to you?
I was just doing art, period. Just, you know, my dad is a musician growing up.
And, okay.
You know, watching him make music, going to their rehearsals, you know, because he was in, like, it's like an old school type of, remember old school R&B? It's like Ready for the World.
Yeah.
Cameo type stuff.
Surface.
So,
After
yeah,
Seven.
Yeah, type of stuff. Yeah, I just used to watch them create and make music at the house. My dad had, like, a bachelor's crib, so they had all these instruments everywhere. It was like instruments, pool tables, drums, and fucking train tracks.
One of these things is not like the other, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess I just grew up in that world.
Okay. So you've always been right. What did your mom do?
Like I said, my dad raised me.
Okay, cool.
And then, yeah.
Okay.
So I don't know where my mom is. I'm kidding.
Gotcha. No. You know, for us, usually it's the other way around, right? Like, yeah. My dad.
I talk about that on stage a lot more now.
My dad wasn't around.
The fact that, you know, I can say my dad was in my life. Like, the joke I just started working on was the fact that he cared. He used to record my favorite cartoon on the VHS. Only problem is he would record him over his old porn.
Oh, no.
And then kind of go, yeah, that's kind of heavy.
I mean, dog, that you just brought back memories. Because I think for our generation, like, it was like, you never knew when you picked up a cassette tape. Like, there was always that little bit of, like, be ready to push stop. Be ready to push stop just in case, you know?
Right.
I found a...
The good old days.
We found... I'm going to share a little bit too much. We found a video. My aunt tried to put in Black Stallion for us once.
Uh-oh.
She was like, oh, you know what? Here you go, kids. Here, y'all watch Black Stallion. And she puts in the cassette tape labeled Black Stallion. It was not about a horse, but somebody was hung like a horse in it. Somebody was hung, like, yeah, I'm going to stop there. Because I knew the people in the video. So it was like, oh, this is what y'all doing. Okay, no. And I'm like 10. Like, oh, what is happening here? Never watched. So you can't get me to watch any movies about horses. If there's a horse in the movie, I'm not watching it. I never saw Troy.
Damn.
There's a horse in the movie. Never watched Mr. Ed.
Traumatized you for life.
Little bit. So you've been creating like your whole life then. Like that's kind of been at the center point of who you are.
Yeah. For writing raps was the main thing. Like all the way in like third and fourth grade, like my dad, I used to write dirty raps. Like just all like as a little guy, I was like a raunchy little kid. Like all my raps was just nasty. I shouldn't have been cursing the way I was. And but as I got older, I mean, I knew that I couldn't be a gangster rapper. I really didn't have the credibility to, you know, live the stuff I was rapping about.
Right.
And comedy rap just don't work.
Facts. Does comedy rap work for anybody outside of Weird Al?
Well, I'll say Eminem kind of when he started out. He made it work. I don't know if it's considered comedy rap, but it was funny.
He was funny. He was mad funny.
Yeah.
He was mad funny.
So and Ludacris too a little bit.
There you go. That's a good one. I think that's about as close to comedy rap that I've seen be successful.
Yeah, but they wouldn't want to be considered comedy rap in that type of genre.
No, because he Luda was just clever. He was mad clever. Right. Like his wordplay, like he really put wordplay on the front. I can't even talk right now. On the front, you know. So I was like, yeah, Luda definitely. He was real clever, real slick with it. And he had a way of making you laugh, go, oh, snap, and dance at the same time.
Right. Yeah. I was a fan of Ludacris. Why do you think he's not as, like, popular?
Because he's making movies, man. Once he got that Fast and Furious money, he was like, man, motherfuck a studio. I got an elevator in my house now.
Yeah, that's what happens, I guess.
Yeah. No, I mean, same thing happened to LL. LL got a little bit of that Hollywood money, and he was like, I don't need a microphone no more.
Ice Cube.
What? Ice T.
Oh, definitely Ice T. I never was a big Ice T fan. Like, I guess he had colors.
I was never a big Ice T fan, but I mean, it didn't even take a lot for that nigga to flip. That Ice T was like, oh yeah, I'll never rap and I'll play a cop. Like,
like Ice T as an actor back in the day. I thought Ice T was like super dope. And he had this movie I just remember called Surviving the Game.
Yo. Bet, yes, that was a great one. And he had that one in New Jack City come out like around the same time. It was like Ice-T was hot as hell.
Yeah.
And then they gave him NCIS, and we was like, who the fuck is this dude?
Solving been crimes. On there forever, hadn't
he? Yeah, man. Probably as long as we've been doing comedy, that nigga's been out there solving make believe crimes. So
that check.
Yo, fuck it. I wish somebody would pay me to solve a make believe crime. Real quick.
Right.
So a couple of years ago, you recorded your first, was Damage Control your first album?
Yeah, my first and biggest disappointment.
Really? At least you released yours. We recorded our albums like a week apart. And I came down to support and watch yours. You were at mine. And
yours was really good, though. Why you didn't release it? I was wondering if you ever put it out.
No, I never put it out. So at least you got that on me. I never put it out because the audio was great, but the video, I couldn't use the video. The lighting was terrible. And I was mm-hmm. like, I can't really put this out without the video component to go with it. I didn't want to just put out the straight audio. So Damn. So that's
just anyway, detox.
Yeah. So niggas is still waiting on that live from the Tiger. We still sitting on it. I mean, cause I still got the artwork. The artwork was dope. I gotta redo it. Just because the video wasn't good.
Just put out the audio.
We'll talk about it. You know, I'm gonna be there tomorrow. I'm gonna see you tomorrow at Upstage. We might be able to work something out. I feel like I just want to do it again.
Yeah, and I feel you. I mean, you probably, you know, I got some jokes you rather want to put on there or something.
Yeah, and it's like
some different jokes,
dude. I'm glad you're here. We can talk about this because we recorded our albums a week apart from each other, and it's like literally, I recorded the album on like a Friday, and the following Sunday, I was in Abilene, and I was working with Dan Madonia, and I wasn't happy with the album because I felt like I rushed it. I felt like my timing was off and all that. And then the very next show, I found a different rhythm with my set and it took it to another mm-hmm. level. And I was like, well, shit, how come I couldn't do this 2 days ago? You know, but right. it's something.
Yeah, I want that. Yeah.
It's something like when you know you're recording, I guess there's an extra level of pressure or whatever. But I think my set is like, immediately after recording the album, I rearranged the order of my set and kind of changed it up. And I like the way it feels and flows better now than on the album. So I'd rather re-record it anyways, just because I think that the act itself is better now than it was when I recorded it.
I feel you on that 100%. Mine was a learning lesson too. I would never do it in a movie theater again. I honestly would want all strangers at my show or people that I don't know. And, probably record like four of them.
Yeah, you just did the one take, right?
Yeah, and it was even the comedians I had before me. I mean, I probably would only let one of them do it. Mm-hmm. I ain't gonna say any names of who I wouldn't. but everything matters when you're recording that thing. You want it just right. I put it on YouTube, and I got like 70 views.
Yeah, okay, I feel you now.
Yeah. I just put it out. I don't even know why, but I'm doing another one in February, but it's going to be completely different.
Okay. Bet. So yeah. It's funny you say that. Cause it's like when you have, I feel like it's a little harder to perform when you know a lot of the audience, you know, when, cause it's like for the album, for our album, for my album and for yours, it was a lot of people that we knew personally there. Like, you know, that people that don't necessarily come out to comedy shows a lot, but they came out to support. And as thankful as I was, I can speak for myself, as thankful as I was for those people showing up and supporting, it doesn't necessarily make the best audience for comedy.
I agree. Yeah, I think so. Like mentally it messes with me. You're not really, I don't think you get that real response that, you know, that you can, get that spark from, like, you know what I'm saying? There's something mm-hmm. generic about it.
There's something there. And it's like, you'll watch the people, other people on the show go up and murder. And it's like, mm-hmm. okay. But and then you get up there and everybody knows you. And then you've got this whole, it's really, I think, a mental thing just on us. You know, like we get on our own heads, like so-and-so's here, so-and-so's there. Got to make sure I'm on my shit. I got to, and it, instead of just actually.
Right. And for me, I had my parents there and I don't know. I was like, I know they ain't never heard me talk about it. It was just too much going on.
Yeah, man. Nah. And you know, you got to get the first one out the way. And then the next time around, I think that all of that stuff kind of dissipates and you just do your thing. But that first time, you know, I'm glad that my first time recording something like that wasn't like on a big stage, that I was able to learn the lessons I needed to learn from it. So that way I'm prepared for the next time. Cause I mean, if I didn't learn those lessons that night, I don't know that I'd be doing what I'm doing right now.
Yeah. And I actually went to do some research. I went to Andrew Schultz's Netflix special he recorded in Austin and kind of saw how he, you know, how he did it and different setups he had. And he invested a lot in it. So I mean, I'm not going to be able to do it on that level, but I took some ideas off of it.
Okay. Okay. So, yeah. That was what, 3 years ago you recorded your album? The first one, Damage Control?
Yeah.
So, or almost three. It's only been 2 years, actually. Yeah, it was like September 2019.
Was it?
I think for you, it was the first week of October, and I had the last week of September.
Yeah, mine was in October.
Yeah, you had like the first week of September, or of October. I had the last week of September. So 2 years ago, you recorded your first album, and then now, fast forward 2021, you just opened Upstage Comedy Lounge in San Antonio. Like, we've talked a little bit over the past 2 years, but like, how did this come about? Like, how did you go from recording Damage Control in 2019 to 2 years later? In October 2019, you recorded your first album, and then I guess September 2021, you open up Upstage Comedy Lounge?
Yeah, the grand opening, September, Labor Day weekend.
So literally 2 years, 2 years from you recording your first album, you open up this club. How did this all come about?
Man, so yeah, you my boy, so I can give you the real raw.
Give it to
funky,
me. I want to hear this.
So of course, you know, during that time, I never had, you know, any thoughts of opening the club or whatever. I was kind of just doing different spots all around town. And the guy that was the DJ, you know, me and him had been doing shows already. We had found one spot that let us do comedy shows consistently, and it started working really good for us. Like, it was a good location. You know, they were shut down and let us just turn it into our own comedy club. And that thing just started growing. We started building a fan base, and it was just funny first Fridays. And we just kept adding stuff. We added on stage. We added more lighting. Like, every show, we added more to it. You know, so to the point that we got it to its peak, we're selling out. We're bringing in bigger artists. I give love for them allowing me to do the shows there. But, you know, after we established it, they started letting other people come and do comedy shows at something we established. And that kind of pissed us off a little bit. I ain't even, you know, told this story. That kind of pissed us off. And we was like, man, we should just open our own spot. So we were just thinking, you know, getting like a small little room or whatever and renting it out. And somehow that just turned into a comedy club. After the pandemic started, somehow it just like, yo, let's just go, you know, go all out and get an actual comedy club.
Okay.
So, so bullshit just kind of inspired it.
No shit. So, who all is involved in the club with you?
My partner, DJ Double K, his name Calvin Ross. I met him in the defensive driving class that I was teaching, and my defensive driving classes weren't really classes. It was really just me getting to know different people, and found out he was a DJ during the class. And I was like, oh, okay, you're a DJ. And he just pulled out his little, you know, DJ stuff he had on his tablet, started making beats. I probably started freestyling or something, and we just kind of connected from there. But yeah, I've never took those classes like too serious as far as like actually teaching. We just tried to have fun.
I don't think anybody took the defensive driving classes less serious than Kool-Aid. I think he took it more or less serious than anybody else that taught defensive driving. I bought weed from Kool-Aid while he was teaching a class. Like, put it out there like that, but I mean, we're boys. I'm just saying, yeah, I hit him up and he's like, yo, come meet me at the club. And I was like, all right, cool. And he's like, I walk in and I'm like, I didn't realize he was teaching a class. I was like, what's happening right now? Is this a fucking open mic? This is a weird ass open mic. And then he's all, hey, Aaron Cheatham's here. How's it going? Hey, everybody, that's Aaron Cheatham. He's a good comedian, blah, blah, blah. Hey, we're going to take a 15-minute break. And he walks over, hands me a bag of chips.
Yeah.
That wasn't a bag of chips. And then I handed him some money. Then I left. And I was like, I'll be goddamn. Wow. I just bought weed in the middle of a defensive driving class.
I actually had Kool-Aid here this past week. He was helping with the workshop. He was speaking. Good knowledge. He's like the king of adding tags to a joke. And, you know, he was giving all these newcomers a bunch of good knowledge. And then he started telling his story. He was like, yeah, so on my way down here, I was doing some cocaine. And I was like, ah, shit. He don't care.
He does not care, man. He's been living that life. You know who else? Him. He's great at adding tags. The king for me, though, will always be Matt Golightly.
As far as what?
Adding tags.
Oh, yeah. He's a machine for, I can't argue with that.
Yeah, when it comes to adding tags, I mean, Matt will sit there, watch a five-minute set, and then give you 3 minutes of tags.
Yeah, it's amazing. He was one of the first comedians that I wanted to book, because I give him a lot of credit as somebody when I first started that was just giving me whatever I asked for. He'll just, like, give me all this advice. He'll, like, check out this club will book you. Or he was just always super cool. Like, no other comic would give up information like that. And then, like you said, the tags, like he gave me so many tags and they all pretty much used to work.
Yeah, man. Dude is a beast. And I kind of feel bad. This is the second time I've talked about him on the show. Maybe I should reach out to Matt. I had his wife on and we talked about him. And then now you and I are talking about him. I should maybe. Yeah.
His wife's in the industry?
No, she wrote a book. She wrote a children's book for it's a Christmas book dropped in July. Santa's Secret Workshop.
Okay.
In fact, I think I need to hit Stacy up because I'm gonna see if I can get her to come on and read it. You know, we read books on here like once a month. We do children's books.
Children's books?
Yeah, I read children's books once a month.
Well, you are a dad. So
exactly.
It makes sense.
So Fridays got to do something with my daughter. Get her out the house. Let's bring her up here. Read some books. Get her ready for nap time. We leave the studio. Give her some Whataburger. She passes the fuck out. I'm fucking dad of the week every month. Once a month, I'm dad of the week for.
You might want to drop a book yourself.
Man, because my book is going to be just like your raps when you were 13.
Okay. I forget you. I consider you more extreme. I mean, that's why I said you fit in more with Comedia Go-Go, because during that time I was trying to clean up my image. And, I've heard stories about you.
Well, hold on. Wait, you've heard stories about me.
Larry told me this funny-ass story about when y'all were on the road trip, maybe to the Valley or something, and y'all stopped at, like, this abandoned place or something like that.
Of the abandoned school? The abandoned school?
Might have been an abandoned school or something. It was something scary.
Uh-huh.
And I think you took, like, the biggest shit or something. I don't know if you remember what I'm talking about.
I think you're mixing, like, four stories together right now.
Maybe.
No, there was an abandoned school. And I can, for the record, say it was not my idea to stop at the school. It was not my idea to get out of the car at the school. It damn sure wasn't my idea to enter the haunted school. I might have been part of Comedia Go-Go, but I was a nigga first. And...
Right.
There's a lot of shit that I was like, yo, what are we doing? What is this? What is it? Like, yeah, we stopped.
Right.
Cause we saw it once. It's like in Mathis, I believe. We were coming back and we saw this abandoned looking school. And then the next time we went down south on the way back, it was Mark Riojas, Regan, Larry, and myself. And, whenever you get like a group of guys together, it doesn't take a lot for some dumb shit to happen. You know, it just takes one dude going, hey, why don't we do this? And then another guy going, all right. And then fuck what the other two think. Like, it's like,
right.
Yeah. So that's just basic guy rule. But then when you're in Comedia Go-Go, it's kind of to the next level. On some next level. Like, let's go do some crazy shit.
I couldn't hang. Like, it was on another level.
For that time in my life, it fit very well. Now, me at this point in my life, I look back at all that. I'm like, you got me fucked up. I ain't finna do a shit. So yeah, we pulled over and went and I legit sat in the car and Regan was like, hey guys, I don't think we should do this. Like, what if there's like spirits? And by that time, Larry and Mark are like, yo, this window's busted. And he's like, oh shit, no. And I'm like, hey, I ain't going to jail for no goddamn stupid Resident Evil house looking fucking school. You're right. There's some wild stories out there back in the Comedia Go-Go days.
Good times, though.
Oh, for sure. I got picked up once. A guy thought I was a gay prostitute. That happened in the Valley. That's a real story. Didn't realize it, but I almost got violated. Stuff.
Yeah, the Valley. We got a lot of stories going out there. That was a crazy place.
Oh shit!
Back in the day, it was fun. It was definitely fun.
Corpus was crazy back in the day. Remember when we used to make those runs to Oasis? Oasis Bar and Grill, man, down in so Corpus. Much. I used to go with D all the time.
That sounds familiar.
D. Williams used to run me down there all the time.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, we used to run, make that run. So what are you, what is, tell me a little bit more about Upstage. Like, what sets you guys apart from, you got LOL down there, you got the Blind Tiger down there.
Jokesters.
And each of those places have their own vibe. What's Upstage about? Because, I mean, Blind Tiger's got a vibe to it. LOL's got its own vibe. Jokesters is fucking right. Crazy every time you go in Jokesters. What's the Upstage vibe? What type of community are you guys cultivating?
Man, of course, we're still trying to find, you know, what our identity is going to be. You know, what's growing is the fact that, we're the first Black-owned comedy club in San Antonio and the seventh Black-owned comedy club in the nation. You know, I wasn't really trying to push that, but that's kind of growing on its own. I guess the fact that we're Black owned, but I'm trying not to have it, you know, be considered just like an urban comedy club, you know what I'm saying? But I don't know. I mean, I came from the River Center Comedy Club, so that's what I know. So kind of following a lot of that culture as far as, you know, adding all-star, you know, more for the comic, instead of, you know, that corporate feel, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I feel you. No, I mean, so I came through
I'm
the same
system. I'm doing
stuff
that would benefit me, that I would want to see as a comedian from a comedy club.
Okay, for you. So for you, it's based on more on like your experiences and what you've seen work and not work in clubs.
Right. I want the comedian to be able to build up. So I guess to answer your question in a nutshell, we're kind of adding a little bit of everything that those clubs already have. Like, we're taking a little bit that Blind Tiger does, a little bit of, you know, LOL, a little bit of, you know, jokes. Jokes is more of a bar vibe to me, but just trying to have like a little bit of everything.
Okay. Have you visited, been to Austin lately?
No, I need to go. I just connected with some, I didn't know Austin had like a Black scene.
A Black scene?
Yeah, I met these people, like it's like some Black comedians down there I didn't know about. It's they do like some trap and paint. They do these poetry stuff at this place called like Victory Grill.
Yeah.
And it looked lit. So I kind of connected with them and going to start doing some work with them coming down here to, you know, do what they do in Austin.
Well, see, in Austin, we've got like four new clubs here now. So I didn't know if you had made it up here to check out some of the clubs here in Austin. Like we got the Creek in the Cave now, Sunset.
You said four new clubs?
Yeah, we got the Romo Room, the Creek in the Cave.
Okay, I haven't seen that.
The Vulcan, the I was at the Sunset Strip last night.
What?
So like those are four consistent, like those are clubs pretty much. Then you still got Velveeta Rogan? Room. He hasn't opened his club yet, but he works out of Vulcan a lot right now. Him and Hinchcliffe do a lot of work out of Vulcan.
That's messed up. You don't even consider Velveeta Room a club. Well, are you saying new clubs?
New clubs, four new clubs. Then there's still Velveeta Room. Cap City will be coming back pretty soon.
It is?
Yeah, it's gonna. But they moved they're moving up to the Domain.
Breaking news for me.
Oh yeah, facts, son, facts. So yeah, I didn't know if you had come and checked out these clubs up here, these new ones, and seen how they run stuff and did any of that.
I need to. I'm about to be up there a lot more.
All right. Well, yeah, for sure. If you need any help when you get up here, definitely hit me up. I'll see what I could do. So,
what about the gun shop?
The guns and giggles. The guns, man. They actually they brought it back without us. I think it lasted about 2 months, 3 months. I didn't hear nothing more about it. So I don't know. They could still be doing it. But Mike had approached me about bringing it back, and I didn't really want to run a show again. At least not right now.
That was a good little gig.
Oh man, I loved it. I loved that joint, man. It was like the perfect location and audience, and like right then at that moment, it was like perfect for me. You know, it's exactly what I needed at the time. Because at the time we were doing it, I was just getting back into comedy. I was just coming off of my 5-year hiatus, so it was a good way to
get. Was that long?
Yeah, I was out for 5 years. So.
Man. That's right. You was working a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
I remember that.
So, yeah, I was out for 5 years. That was a good way to get back into it, running that show. But, no, nah, I think they ran, like I said, for like 3 months, and I haven't heard nothing more about it since. But it's always okay. It's always on the table. If I want to bring it back, you know, Mike has made it abundantly clear that if I want to do something there, we can always come back. So
okay. But so if I come out to Austin, which one of those new rooms should I be trying to like start with as far as trying to get on?
Oh, you're trying to put me on the spot on camera, huh? You trying to?
Oh, my bad. Is it too much?
I still eat here, Bobby.
I don't know nothing about the Romo. Like, I guess which one is like kind of established? Are they all kind of established?
I'd say, in all honesty, I would. All right, to put it in the terms you just put it in. So Vulcan is kind of like Jokesters. And
okay.
Because it is a bar. And they have a big stage and they do comedy there, but it was a bar first. And I'd say Romo Room is of the new clubs, yeah, you would probably think Romo is kind of like I don't know, because the Creek in the Cave and the Romo Room aren't trying to be A clubs. They're not trying to be LOL. They're not trying to be Cap City. Those are both places that are very comedian friendly, especially for local comedians and people that are trying to get better. Those two rooms are they're the Romo Room is smaller than the Creek in the Cave, but they're both basically doing a lot of stuff for the Austin scene, giving people opportunities, running mics every day. They do a lot of the same type of stuff, but in different parts of town. One is in the Domain, the other one is downtown. And then Sunset Strip, that's more for people that are like, that's more like people that are on the road, established people coming in and getting in, maybe a couple of local cats per show. But they're basically just, you know, a weekend, Friday, Saturday. We got Thursday, Friday, Saturday. We got shows type deal.
Okay. I'm about to put you on the spot again.
Yeah.
So if you were to record your special out there, which room would you prefer?
If I was to record it here, I wouldn't want to do it in any of the clubs here.
You don't want to do it in Austin at all?
Oh, no, it's not that I don't want to do it at Austin at all. It's I wouldn't want to do it at any of those rooms at all. Well, not at all. Okay. I take that back. I'm not going to say at all. Cause clearly I would love, there's nothing against them. But there are other venues here in town that I vibe with a little bit more as a performer. That I feel more like that have a stage that I really like, or the seating and stuff, you know, like the an ambiance that clicks. There's a few places around town that like I love performing at, and
yeah,
you know, like Santa Cruz Theater. I love performing at Santa Cruz Theater. It's a great stage. I love the venue. I love the people there. I always feel real comfortable. Like whenever I perform at Santa Cruz, I feel like I'm at home. Is the closest thing to feeling like I'm back in San Antonio when I'm on stage. And go figure, Santa Cruz, it's, you know, a local Latino-owned venue. So with Aztec gods graffitied on the side of the building and shit. Like, But it's a dope theater. It's a dope theater. So it's nothing against any of the clubs. It's just there's a few venues and theaters here around town that I just really like. And like I said, Santa Cruz is a good one. We had the Black and Tan. We had a show there, the family reunion show where we all performed. And it's like a 100-150 seat theater. So it's not a big theater. So it's a big stage, but it has such an intimate feel to it. And that's my vibe right there.
I'd say probably perfect for comedy.
Oh yeah. It's great for comedy. But nothing against any of the rooms here. The clubs, but just, you know, my own personal preference. I want to do it. I mean, the Blind Tiger was perfect because it's also a small, intimate room. And to be honest, at the time, like the Blind Tiger was my home club, you know, like I was driving from here to the Blind Tiger every week. You know, they saw, I was in San Antonio performing twice a month before the pandemic.
Yeah. I haven't figured out why that's a difficult room for me.
The Tiger?
Yeah,
it's just stylistic, probably. Just, you know, that's why I asked about the vibe of upstage, like what you guys were trying to cultivate, because a lot of times it's just the vibe makes the audience, and the audience makes the shows.
It's it's very sexy. Like the inside is like shocking to people when they come in because it doesn't, you know, it doesn't look like anything like the outside. Not that the outside is all fucked up, but.
But it's a fucking time machine. It's the magic time machine.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, it's a little. The outside is a little jarring. Then you go inside and go, oh, shit, it's like a New York club. What the fuck? I'm just, you know,
right.
Low ceiling, go down some stairs, tight room. It's not. But
it's crazy.
It's about vibe, you know, and where you feel comfortable. And for me, like, that's I like places where I can, like, work. Where I can go and I can just work shit out. I don't have to worry about politicking. I don't have to worry about, you know, doing stuff for appearances or doing. No, it's like I like to go places where I can just go and work on my shit, figure it out and then move on. And the Tiger for me was a place where I could just go and grind out some work.
Yeah. I like a lot what they do. Like, that's why with the workshop that we have, like I'm trying to help a lot of the new comics because it looked like they don't know how to host. They don't know how to, they just don't understand. They don't even, you know, a lot of new comics don't even know a lot of the lingo of comedy. You know what I mean? Like, what hack means or, what's some other comedy terms that you should just know?
Do they understand what the light is?
I mean, that's what I probably need to teach. Like, they don't understand. Correct me if I'm wrong, but like, if somebody gives you the light, I feel like it's good etiquette to do a light acknowledgement. Like, you know, I see it.
Okay.
You know,
yeah.
You know, so just little stuff like that. And no, they don't know what it means. They don't know if they got a minute left or five. So yeah, it's a lot of stuff that comics don't know.
Oh, well, then it's good that you have establishments there that can teach them. And I think that's just the problem. A lot of people have been winging it, trying to figure it out on, you know, because you can't go take classes on this shit where they're going to teach you all this. And you might be able to read some books, but it's about doing it in practice. I just think a lot of people have been out there in the wild, you know, doing it like cowboy style and not getting right. The structure that's needed to be successful. And maybe,
have you ever took notes on the stage?
Have I ever?
I'm sure you have. All comics have.
Taking notes on the stage?
Yeah, like some of your jokes, like, oh, you know, like your set.
Yeah, man, back in the day, yeah. I mean, shit, even now, if I'm working on new stuff, for sure. But I'm terrible.
Like, how do you hide that from the crowd?
Ooh.
Or are you discreet with it? Or do you?
Nah, so, care? I mean, like, if I'm talking about current day me, if I'm up there with notes, like, I don't give a fuck. If I have notes up there, I'm working on some shit, I don't give a fuck. So I'm going to let you know, hey, I'm working. I'll come straight out. This is some new shit. Let's see how this go. You know, but I've kind of developed a style over the past couple of years where, like, when I'm working on new stuff, like, I kind of let the audience know, like, hey, we workshopping right now. I let them know I'm trying some stuff out. Tell me what you think, like, real time. And I'll try the shit out. And I've had like audience members add tags or give me some stuff that made some jokes that I use in my set much better. You know, like, hey, maybe if you pause right here and then go into it, it's like, I never even thought of that. So yeah, the way I work around using notes on stage is to tell them, hey, we're all in this together now. Like, hey, let's figure some jokes out, y'all. Let's work it out. And the whole thing is about, I'm on this, I'm looking at my notes right now, and this is what I got. Tell me what you think.
I think that's a gem that you just gave that probably a lot of people don't know or don't even like because their ego is too big. But you're open enough to receive feedback from an audience member. You're not, you know, even if they're not a comic, sometimes a regular audience member will give you the best tag.
Facts, because they're coming from their own experience. They're not thinking about being funny or their own, their own theories or whatever on comedy. They're like, oh, no, nah, man. Some shit like that happened to me once and my homeboy did this. I'm like, yo, that shit's fucking gold right there. Okay, boom, done. So yeah, nah, like if who better to get advice from than the people that are your consumers?
Right. Nah, I agree. Yeah. I never heard nobody kind of say it, but I'm like, he right.
Ah, well, appreciate you. tell me more though about what you guys have been up to. So you guys open in September.
Open in September.
What have you had so far?
Kind of been adding.
Huh? What have you guys been having going on so far?
You know, we started with a lot of local acts on the weekends, but now we're adding, you know, we added the open mic. We added the workshop. We're about to add like a trivia and karaoke night. And, you know, Thursday is kind of miscellaneous. You know, we just have different stuff on Thursday. So that's kind of been helping, you know, people get to know us is just adding different things.
If somebody is new and trying to get into comedy, is this a place that you're brand new to comedy that like, are you welcoming? Are you inviting in new people, and what type of structures do you guys have in place? Like like open mic wise, like, is there a schedule? Like when we started, we all knew Friday, 5 o'clock, River Center Mall, go to the comedy club. That's when the open mic is. That was the only mic in town. It's like 5 o'clock Wednesday on 5 o'clock on Friday, River Center Comedy Mall. Yeah. Is it the same?
It's pretty much the same. It's a lot harder to build an open mic. I mean, you know, open mics are difficult. You know, they're up and down anyway. But we do open mics on Wednesdays. People sign up online, and we've been having like 30 plus comics on the list. And you know, maybe like, you know, not as many audience members, which kind of makes it difficult. But now I was about to ask you your opinion. I just went blank. My bad.
No worries.
But we did open mics on Wednesdays.
When you said that, you remind me of something. So when I was running, the Guns and Giggles thing at the gun store, I remember Larry. I'm bringing his name up again as I'm wearing his shirt. Shout out to my boy Larry, our boy Larry Garza.
I just booked him at Upstage today. Made his flyer and everything.
What? I'm tired of this. Back. Tired of this motherfucker always stepping on my shit, Larry. Motherfucker, see that I'm gonna be there tomorrow. So now he got to get on. Let me tell you about this motherfucker, Larry. He's actually gonna be on the show real soon. Right after Thanksgiving, I think we're gonna get him on. But when I was doing that, he said to me one day, he goes, "Are you a comedian or are you a booker? Because you're trying to be both, and it's kind of hard to be both. So if you're a comedian, like, be a comedian, and if you're a booker, be a booker." Now you're an owner. Are you still a comedian?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm more inspired. I mean, even though I see a bunch of comedy, I have access to the stage, so it kind of, you know, I'm using it to my advantage. Mm-hmm. So, I'm definitely still a comedian.
Is it harder?
Oh, go ahead.
Do you think it's harder, for you to focus on? Because I mean, it's possible to do both, but I think it's very hard to focus and give the appropriate amount of energy to both to be successful in both. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, definitely. Especially like, say, if I book myself the host, it's almost impossible really just like be all the way focused, because, you know, at this point we're still brand new, and I still got to do a lot of running around and, you know, pick up where people need help and stuff. And then there was one show where I had to deal with a bartender that was like tripping and threatening to leave. I'm probably putting too much business out there. And then I had to go deal with some customers that got, you know, upset over something that was really, really small, but they still needed the owner's attention. Then I had to run back and introduce myself to go host, went up and hosted, came back to run the music for the next comedian. So it's ghetto as shit, but it's a lot. So yeah, it's extremely difficult. But I think once you know, we're able to get things running a little smoother and I have more help, then I can focus, you know, on these jokes.
What's the hardest part of owning your own club?
Just like on the business end, as far as learning the taxes, the, you know. We recently just learned, like, damn, we get taxed on each ticket we sell. So we got to change some stuff up with the way that we got the business set up. Or the whole liquor part is a whole world of its own of, you know, how the liquor works, you know, how to get the best deals and, you know, how much money we're making per pour, who's stealing drinks. I can go on and on and on, but I'm busy from as soon as I wake up until I try to go to sleep. I don't even sleep because I got so much stuff on my mind. And I still got to try to be funny.
That is a lot. Is there a favorite part of the job that you didn't know you were going, that was going to be your favorite thing to do, or something that you enjoyed doing?
I mean, really, you know, managing the staff, I mean, that is pretty cool. You get to know these people and kind of become family. And I get like I've always kind of been a humble dude. I kind of been, you know, I'm never the most outspoken guy in the group. I just kind of like listen or whatever. So it's weird, you know, people kind of respect me like, damn, I'm a boss. Like you get, it's like a different authority that I'm not really used to. Like, you know, everybody's asking me, can I do this? Can I do this? Can I like, but yeah.
Yeah, you grown up,
it's just
right?
Weird to me. I haven't got used to that yet.
Okay. No shit. What are you looking forward to in the future for Upstage?
Just, you know, to bring, you know, some of the best comedians around. Just be successful, to have packed shows every weekend is pretty much all we want. And you know, for everybody to leave with having a good time. I mean, I know that's a generic answer, but that's pretty much it. Just a good spot for comedy in San Antonio to last, you know, at least 10 years.
You're like, at least, nigga, I got at least 10 years.
Yeah. I think River Center was only around for about 20 years.
Well, I thought it was around like 30 years.
It might have been. Yeah, probably.
Long enough to get us started. Long enough to teach us what we needed to know and send us out into the wild.
Yeah.
And give us a place to go back to every now and then. Go get a showcase right quick. Make $25.
Right. I hate it disappear the way it did.
Oh, tell me about it. Were you there for the last show?
Nah, I couldn't even make it.
Man, I had just got off the road and like the day before, and I shot down there and I just went to go, you know, say my goodbyes. I took the sign. Yeah, I said it. I took the sign that was out front of the club, the live comedy. 18 and up, for shows start 7:30, all like that sign that they used to post, tape the picture of who was in town. I'll send you a picture of it. It's in my garage. I got it hanging up. I took the sign.
Probably make some money off it.
No, that's my shit. Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
Because Larry got something too that he said he's going to actually give me. It ain't what you got. It's something different. Remember what Larry got?
I don't, but I was with him when he, here's the thing. When I was trying to figure out if I could take that sign, somebody told me I'd ask Aaron Suarez. Not Aaron Suarez, Mike Suarez.
Okay.
So I was like, hey, Mike, somebody told me to ask you about that. He goes, I don't know, ask Larry. And I was like, ask Larry? Yeah, okay.
Ask Larry.
That's mine now. Ask Larry, that's mine. That done.
Now I'm mad I didn't make it. I wanted to get something too.
Man, I'll tell you what, it was... So I didn't expect to perform. I just went to you know, say goodbye to the place that where I started, you know? Because I don't... Side note, like personal shit, like I don't have a lot of shit that I can go back to, right? Like the house I grew up in Mississippi was destroyed by Katrina. Like my whole neighborhood is gone. So like I don't have a place that I can go back and be like, yo, this is home. This is where I came up. River Center was one of those places for me though that I could always go back to. So I felt like I had to be there to say goodbye. It was important to me to be there. Because if it wasn't for that place, then I mean, I don't know that I'm doing this shit. But it was that 5 o'clock Friday mic where I started, and you know, it's where I learned a lot of the skills that I still use today. So I got to perform. They asked me to go up and do like 5 since I was there.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And man, that was dope, man. That was a moment. That's a moment. Like, not only did I get to perform on the last show there, but objectively speaking, I crushed that shit. Last show there, and I went out on a high note, and it's, for me, it was just like one of those full circle deals, man. It's like, you know, to remember where I started from, the dude that stood on stage and I don't know if you were there my first time, but it was bad. I just kind of stood there and stared for a while, mumbled some stuff, asked about a wicker stool, and it was the worst.
Who wasn't like that when they first started?
Oh, there's a few motherfuckers who like to brag, but you know, some people peak at the first time. I am a grower, not a shower. So I had to.
I watched you grow more than not to go off what you just said, but I watched you progress more than like a lot of comics that I've ever seen.
That was a good pause right. moment right there. That was a good right, pause. Right. Yeah.
But you're talking about like really finding themselves and coming out their shell. Like that was you.
Oh, for like, sure. You know, thank you. I appreciate
it. You always
that.
Had it in you. But when you came onto the scene, you was like fuck that. Like, you went all in. Like you took yourself out your comfort zone and you started doing that shit.
Facts. Thank you. I appreciate that. But so, yeah, that was real special for me to be there and be able to perform and steal shit on the last day.
I would have went, but the River Center had changed as far as like a lot of the politics of it. And I started having fallen outs with all these people that they gave, you know, power, and they started like kind of pushing me out. And, you know, I didn't fight it. I just stopped coming.
Hey, they can't push you out of Upstage, can they?
Yeah. I'm sure all that has sparked the reason why it opened. So a lot of bullshit.
As we begin to wrap up a little bit here, San Antonio, I don't know, maybe is more diverse than Austin, maybe, or I feel like it is.
Definitely got more white people.
Up here, yeah, for sure. It's like San Antonio is like, it's like the same level of diversity, just Mexican instead of white. I know up here there's been a lot of conversation about diversity in the comedy scene and opportunity for diversity. In San Antonio, where it is a Latino heavy community down there, where does Upstage fit in with giving opportunity for diversifying the comedy scene down there? Are you guys looking to have diverse, not only audiences, but artists? Or are you just gonna play to the San Antonio thing?
No, I'm trying to keep it diverse. Like last night we had an improv group called House Party Improv, and their whole cast is white. Like we had nothing but white people in here, and the tips were great. And but that's a goal of mine, is to really, you know, try to be fair and mix it up. Like we got Larry, we got Jay LaFarge. I feel like comedy should be more diverse and you know, universal instead of just, you know, one main thing, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a huge goal, is like I have to catch myself like, man, I'm not just booking the same type of urban acts or whatever. Like, I want to definitely keep it diverse and mix it around.
Cause that's something that they're going to be, that I think people will be looking at when you got a black owner of a club. Is this going to become Def Jam? Is this going to become, you know, nothing but black comics are allowed to perform here, nothing but black audiences here? You know, like people are going to, I think in San Antonio, people will automatically make that assumption that, oh, that's the black room. And it's like, no, it's.
Yeah. We can't have that because we only have so many black people out here. And like, we're just not going to survive by just doing all shows.
By having Blair Thompson headline every weekend.
Right. Yeah, it's just not going to work.
I love Blair, though. I fucking love Blair.
Yeah, Blair's the truth.
Yeah, but you can't have him headlining.
My partner on my podcast.
Are y'all still doing that?
We took a little bit of a break because, you know, me trying to run this club. We didn't have a lot of time. And then he's like fourth in command at his job, so he has a lot on him.
Oh, so what, he's like the head of his department at Best Buy now?
Yeah.
Oh, he's running electronics?
Shit, he's like above that now. He's doing, I forgot his actual position, but he's pretty important.
What?
So he has to show up on time.
Oh, look at Blair. Okay. Shit. Yep. Oh, successful.
He's been there for about over 10 years.
At the same job?
Blair, I mean, believe it or not, Blair knows how to keep a job. Like when I look back, like he was the manager of Office Depot when he worked there. So you wouldn't think it, but yeah, he knows how to work his way up.
Blair, a good corporate ass. Look at this old corporate ass nigga out here just smoozing and shit. Oh, Blair wear the fuck out of some Dockers.
Oh man.
No, it's good to hear that. Because I know, like up here, when the new clubs opened, diversity was a big conversation. It was a big part of the convo when it came to the clubs. Like, what are you doing to offer diversity? And at the Creek in the Cave, they asked, what can we do to offer more diversity to the scene, give more people options?
Does Ali Sadiq run that?
No. Creek is from New York. Rebecca Trent and Colton Dowling.
So why were people saying that?
That he runs it? Who said
everybody's
that?
Everybody's like, Ali Sadiq opened Creek in the Cave.
Oh, you know, he opened. He was the first headliner at the Creek in the Cave.
Wow.
The opening headliner. He was the first headliner they had. So yeah, he opened. Yeah, they different. People be talking.
Right.
You know, that's.
Yeah, I got you.
Yeah, yeah. Telephone. Okay. Somebody said he opened it, and they're like, oh, that nigga owns it? No, he was the first headliner the first weekend of the club.
Okay, I'm about to cut somebody off when they get off here.
Who gave me bad info, man?
Yeah,
I've been texting Ali about this damn club for 3 months now.
Right. Because they said him and his manager both opened it before that.
No, sir. There's no... There are no truth to that. I've had the owners of the Creek and Cave on the club, on the show.
Okay.
Well, I had one of them on, and then the other one, Rebecca, I talk to her pretty often. So, no, there's no truth to that at all.
No. Okay. All right, well, that clears that up.
Ali's the dude, though. He's the man. But yeah, he's
I would
not,
love to have him here at Upstage.
No doubt. I mean, who wouldn't? But yeah, that was something they looked at up here. They made it a big effort to add diversity and do what they can do to help the scene out and let people have a stage. I think they have mics every day up there, like multiple mics a day. So if anybody, there's no reason for you to not be able to get on stage and get the work you need if you really want it. But
okay.
Bobby, it's been a pleasure, man. Please plug your stuff. Tell the people where they can find you. Tell them all the info about Upstage.
Go to our website, upstagecomedy.com. You can find our schedule, all our shows tonight. I'm not sure when this airs, but we got Tim Bay. He's like a social media personality that it's already like almost sold out. It's pretty much sold out. So that's a blessing. But follow us on social media, Upstage Comedy, Instagram, Upstage Comedy Lounge on Facebook. We got Twitter, LinkedIn, and just keep supporting live comedy no matter where you're at.
Bet. What's your Twitter handle? Is it Upstage?
It's actually at B Smitty C. I don't know how to change the actual handle to Upstage. I'm like, damn, why he asked me?
Can we get somebody to help Bobby with his social medias?
I'm old.
I know.
Hey, and we look forward to having you here this weekend as well. I know you're going to shut it down. It's always a pleasure working with you.
Oh, man, I'm looking forward to it. Like I said in that Facebook post, I haven't performed in San Antonio since before the pandemic. So,
that's no bueno.
Yeah, it's been too long. So I'm looking forward to coming down tomorrow and holding it down. Hopefully 3 or 4 people saw my Facebook post and they'll come out and hang out with us. Five. We need at least 5 to be there so we can have a show. So I need 5 right. people to show up.
Hey, it's going to be good. I'm using that show as a toy drive, too. So if some people can bring a toy, you know, we'll allow them to either get in half off.
Children's toys. Don't bring your mama's
right. wiffle bag.
Yeah. Children's toys, y'all. Children's toys. No clamps, no butt plugs. We got children's toys you need to bring. I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be a lot of fun. Bob, I love watching you grow. Love your story. Thank you for coming on and hanging out. Dude, it's been a pleasure watching you grow and traveling. Like I said, we've been traveling a lot of the same roads, maybe not at the same time, but we've been up and down roads, the same roads, and seen a lot of the same things over the past. Y'all don't need to know how long we've known. It's been
I appreciate that.
No so, doubt.
Whenever I'm Austin, you're going to be the first person I hit up.
Please do. And anything I can do to help you when you're up here. I got you. And everybody, make sure you go to the website, check out Upstage Comedy. Is it upstagecomedy.com?
.com, yeah.
There you go, upstagecomedy.com. Check it out. Support these guys. They're doing big things down in San Antonio. And you know what? There's never been a problem with having too many options when it comes to art. The more options, the better. And I'm looking forward to seeing the benefit that you guys add to the scene down there in San Antonio. I'm proud of you, Bobby. Keep up the good work, man.
I appreciate it. I'm proud of you as well. Look forward to seeing you tomorrow.
All right. We'll see you mañana, brother.
All right.
Peace.
All right. Peace.
Bobby don't know how to turn it off. Thank you guys for listening to another episode of the Gray Area Podcast. As always, we're brought to you by betterhelp.com/gray. Get yourself the help you need if you need it. Until next time. You can find us at, I'm forgetting our social media shit. On Twitter, podcast Gray Area, Instagram, podcast The Gray Area, Facebook, Gray Area Podcast. Also, you can find me at _ Aaron Cheatham on everything. And then Aaron Cheatham on Facebook. Until next time, guys, please be kind to each other. And please go check out my brother Bobby. I've known that dude for a long time. I've watched this man work his ass off. And to be in the position that he's in now, it was a great to sit here and just cut it up with my brother that I haven't talked to Bobby in a minute outside of, booking the show that we got coming up. But, man, y'all support Bobby. And if you got local comedy wherever you're at, please go out and support local comedy. Till then, be kind to one another. Here's Mud in Your Eyes. Peace.
Thanks for listening. You can find more episodes and all of our other Hot Pie Media originals baked fresh daily at our home online at hotpiemedia.com, the Hot Pie Media YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to podcasts.